Welcome back to another episode of Chats with Clark. I'm your host, Joe Clark. And if you haven't hit that subscribe button, I just don't know what you're waiting for. But here at Chats with Clark, we do not do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point today are two very wonderful human beings, Kat and Nikki. Kat and Nikki, how are you both?
We're doing good. Thanks for having us, Joe.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here, you guys. It's an absolute honor to have you here.
Honestly, so, the privilege is ours. Because when you asked us to be on this, I was like, no, thank you. Because this is an opportunity for us to like reflect on our experience in Jamaica and really just have this as a keepsake. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome. It's going to be special for sure. So as Nikki mentioned, and as you can see, if you're watching this episode, both Kat and Nikki are wearing special Jamaica shirts. Now, they both got to spend a long period of time in Jamaica, and we will be touching on that in just a second. But why don't you both introduce yourselves, kind of tell us a little bit about yourselves, where you're from, and we'll get going.
Sure. I'm Kat Lemansky. I am currently living in Arlington, Virginia. I went to the Catholic University of America, graduated in 2019. I work at a nonprofit now down here, but I know both Nikki and Joe actually from spending time with them in Jamaica. So yeah, very excited to be here.
Great. And I'm Nikki Malacher, and I am from Cleveland, Ohio, a suburb just south of it called Valley View. I went to John Carroll University with Joe, and currently I work in Solon, if you're familiar with the area, and I am their human resource manager and accountant.
Awesome, you guys. It's, again, an absolute pleasure to have you here. I'm excited. Thanks for filling us in. And so tell us a little bit about this experience. So you both applied and went on a what was supposed to be year-long immersive experience in Jamaica, but I'm not the expert. You both are the expert. So maybe tell us a little bit about this backstory and what the program's about and how that application process went.
Sure. Yeah. So for me, I always knew that a year of service was what I was going to do post-grad. I did not apply to any jobs. I did not apply to grad school. It was something that I was very set on. So then the question came, what program? I knew I wanted a faith-based program, and I knew I wanted to live in community there, and living in community with the people I was serving with, not with the people I was serving, which is typically, I would say, something that differs from more faith-based groups and government-run groups. So, for example, the Peace Corps, a lot of the times you're not in community with the people, other Peace Corps volunteers. But I would say, from what I know, a lot of other Christian or Catholic organizations, you're typically living within that community. So I knew I wanted that. And most faith-based groups that I was looking through, and I'm trying to think, it's like the Catholic Volunteer Network. You can get a booklet, and it's literally a thick magazine of all the volunteer opportunities you can do. And a lot of them have the same ish four pillars. Some are named a little bit differently, but they're typically, I want to make sure I get this right, so Nikki help me out, service, simplicity, spirituality, and I know it, community. So most have those four or something along those lines. So then you're like, okay, so how am I supposed to decide within these four? PVI, so we served with the Passionist Volunteers International. PVI has two foundations along with their four pillars. Mm-hmm. And their foundations are accompaniment and serving the crucified of today. My greatest fear in doing a year of service, and especially doing an international year of service, was that my volunteer work would be toxic. I don't know if any of you have read Toxic Charity. But it's essentially along the lines that a lot of the volunteer work people do can end up being toxic, can make the people that you're serving become dependent on the work that you're doing. Something that really struck me from that book is, and sorry for the lack of detail, I forget where they were, but I want to say they were in Africa. A group went over, they helped a community build a well. It was awesome. It really helped the community because they didn't have to walk miles to get their water. the well was great. And then 4 months, if something broke and the locals did not know how to fix it. So they go back to the way of their way of life. 8 months later, the group comes back because they come back every year. They fix the well. Everything's great. Everybody's happy. They leave. 4 months later, the well breaks. They're back in the same spot. So what is that really doing for the people? And that was my fear. Like, am I going to come in here and start teaching at a school and imposing my beliefs and what I think is the best for them? Is that what's going to happen? And with PVI, it wasn't possible because of the mission that you were serving. And I remember reading on their website, and I wrote it down so I didn't mess it up, but it says service through accompaniment first learns the needs, then moves to action or projects that can be undertaken in a sustainable manner. And I read that and I was sold. And that's what made me choose PVI.
That's special. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Kat. It's really great. And with the Jamaican thing, was that the PVI's option, or was PVI offering a bunch of different places?
Yeah, so PVI right now is only in Jamaica.
Perfect.
Years ago, it was Jamaica or Honduras, but right now their program is solely in Jamaica.
Great. How about you, Nikki? How did it go for you?
So I went to Walsh Jesuit High School. It's a Jesuit high school, and their mantra is men and women for and with others. So freshman year, they really kind of hone in on that and the idea of service, but being with the people. Now, I remember my freshman year, I got really close with the campus minister. And I remember I went into his office the one day and I was like, I think I meant to do a year of service. I don't know what that means, but I'm supposed to do it. And he's like, you are 15 years old, go to second period. And I'm like, okay, fair. And so from such a young age, like, this has been something that's been on my heart. And I really believe that God placed it there. Kat and I were talking about this earlier. It's like, sure, like, you have the free will to choose where you're gonna go, but that stir within would have never gone away. And so through high school, it was always on my mind. And so then in college, when I went to John Carroll, they had the immersion program. And I remember freshman year, I was like, I'm gonna apply to it. And so I did. And where did I get placed? With Jamaica. And so I was there for 10 days. And boy, I fell in love with the culture and with the people, and really learning what it means to live simply and what it means to be fully human in the purest forms. So as my time in John Carroll, it developed, I kind of did stray away from that, because once I dove into my classes, I'm like, okay, like, I'm business driven. Where do I want to work? What do I want to do? What does that look like? Well, then junior year happened, and I remember being at church, and I remember really praying about it and being like, God, please lead me and guide me. No matter what that looks like, please lead me and guide me. And I remember during communion, the song was, Whom Shall I Send? And it's like, Here I Am, Lord. And I remember in that moment, I'm like, okay, God, I'm here. I'm going to do it. I hear you once again. The signs are here. I'm going to go. So then senior year, similarly to Kat, I received that booklet from one of our campus ministers. And I'm flipping through it. And I knew for me, I'm like, I want to do international. I want to do international. I want to learn a new culture, a new language. I definitely wanted it to be faith-based, because that's something that's so important to me. And I obviously wanted to grow within that and also live in a community that fostered that. Similarly to Kat, I also wanted to live in community with people also serving. Truthfully, I don't think I would have been able on each other through the whole experience, and we knew what each other was going through in a lot of ways, so to be able to come home and decompress was really crucial. And so for me, though, the discernment process was very difficult. It wasn't this clear-cut answer by any means, and I think to listen to God is very hard for me personally. It's like all this noise for myself is like going through my mind of like, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? What if I make the wrong choice? And at the end of the day, it's like, just pause. Something that I remember during my spiritual direction was imaginative prayer. And I'm like, okay, put to the test, like, what you have learned and what you've worked on. And so I remember, seriously, like, closing my eyes, lighting a candle, and imagining myself at the different places and what that would look like. And I got to be honest, when I landed on Jamaica, my soul and spirit felt so free. And I felt this, like, overwhelming sense of peace that I was yearning for because, gosh, I mean, it's not an easy decision at all. You're dedicating a life away from your family, away from your friends, and away from life as you know it. And so to be provided with that grace was really such a blessing. And then I think once you land on it, you got to own it. And you got to be like, okay, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to make the best and the most of it.
That's awesome. I love that both of you kind of instilled your faith there. And, you know, candles have a lot of pressure because I feel like they're always present when we're trying to make such pivotal decisions. So I'm glad to hear that you made the most of those too. But on a serious note, so you both prayed about it. You both decided through your own means that Jamaica was the spot for you. And so from there, you both had to apply, I'm assuming, right? Like, because I would imagine that there's more than just the two of you that are like, oh, this is what I'm thinking for me. So how does that process look like? Because what a gift to on the people who have to pick the PVI's part, like to have to decide who they send and who they do not send. And so how did that go?
Yeah, so I remember right off the bat for PVI specifically, we sent like a one pager. It was like the pre-application to the application. And then you had a quick interview with the director at the time. And I think that was just to feel each other out, make sure that you were applying. They're not going to kind of waste their time continuing the whole process if they can really tell from the beginning that you're just doing it to just do it or what have you. And then you get into, I want to say the application was like 15 pages long. It was really long.
It was extensive for sure. Because they're weeding a lot of people out at this point. And if you're willing to take the time to write these essays, you're putting a lot of your skin in the game, you know?
Right. And they have, so like there's short answer questions. And then I want to say there were like four essays that we had to do. And then it's like a job too. You have you need letters of recommendation, and then you also need peer letters of recommendation. And then you go into your interviews.
Wow. And how long was this whole process for you? How long are you guys kind of sweating this out?
I would say it was stretched over a few months.
Yeah.
And for the interviewing process, that was a full day. So it was a day full of Zoom interviews. So you'd be in a group interview, say like this, and then you'd have break off sessions. So I remember I'm like, okay, you got to block off the whole day. And then they also had like a little Q&A, which I thought was really helpful because they had past volunteers there and you were able to ask questions such as like, so how do you do your laundry? Or like, do you have any days off? What do you do in your days off? You know, sort of things like that. So that was very helpful.
Yeah, that's cool. That allows you to just talk to the experience. Anytime we can gain that knowledge, it's kind of provides peace a little bit, or maybe some solace in like taking such a huge jump.
Sure.
Yeah, my interview process is like a little different because I must have applied a little late, I want to say, because I missed that full day. So I ended up getting, just due to location, I got to meet one-on-one with the director and have an interview. And there was a previous PVI that was living around here as well. So I had my interview, the other guy showed up, they said goodbye, and then I got to sit with the former PVI for like an hour and a half, everything and anything. And they know exactly what you like went through, or they went through, and they know what you're going through in the process. So like I'd ask questions, or he'd be like, do you have anything else? And I'd be like, I don't know, I can't even think of one right now. And he's like, well, I know you want to ask this, so I'm just going to answer it anyway. And things like that. So that was really helpful.
That's great. Yeah. And you have a lot of reflective people that are going to be in this pool. So they definitely are probably practicing these skills of putting themselves in a position like, oh yeah, like I was there, I can put myself in that headspace and kind of maybe at least reason with you a little bit.
Right.
That's great. Do you think that faith is a huge part of it? Like, could you see someone who perhaps is not involved in any faith, or maybe less than the two of you? How do you think that would go for them? What role does faith play, I guess, is the basic question.
Sure. I think that perhaps for some individuals, that's such a pull and a draw. And for others, it's not. I mean, faith is such a journey. And I think that even faith-filled people are in different places, right? So I would say for some people, it's a pull. And for other people, it's just a part of the program. Now, we do have things put in place. Like once a week, we had a spirituality night. And of course, you participate in it. But I think that faith is such a broad spectrum that it looks different for different individuals, right? Like for some people, you might call God. For other people, you might call it the universe, and so on and so forth.
Right.
And I think, though, that regardless, you're brought back through your gratitude, through love, through all those values that really draw you to this type of experience, right? So yeah, I think that there's, throughout the years, has been such a wide range.
You can't shy away from it, I would say. So you don't have to be a very devout Catholic. The PBI was a Catholic organization. So you did, and I would say all of us there were Catholic on very different faith journeys. Sure. And you can apply and you can be accepted and you can do amazing work there without being part of the Catholic faith or even the Christian faith. But I will speak just from our experience in Jamaica, you can't shy away from it because it's the culture and it's the program as well. So you at least have to be open to it. And I think for me, I would say, and Nikki and I have talked about this, you know, God is good and God is goodness, and all the good that we do and all the good that we put out there, I firmly believe is through him. It's through the graces he gives us to be those vessels. So I think for some people, they might not connect that. They might not haven't gotten there yet, but you can't not be a witness to that over and over again with the work you do in Jamaica. And maybe it still won't connect, and that's okay. But I will say you would not go through your day without if you were working that day, I would say every 15, 20 minutes hearing someone say God, and not in vain.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen to that.
Faith-based.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, Nikki?
Sure. Yeah. The culture is faith-based in a lot of ways. Like even something as simple as you say, like, how are you? Or like, wagwan, which is how they say in patois. It's always like, I am blessed, or like giving thanks to God.
So special.
It's just like their common response. It's so special because how many times, and I do it all the time, how are you? Good. You know, and it's like this automatic response. And for them, it's just so rooted within them to have a faith and to give thanks and to be blessed and to recognize their blessings.
Mm-hmm. You're spot on. Yeah, I remember like when I was down there, like you guys know, just for those 10 days, and it was all the time. I was like, oh, God bless you, God bless you. I'm like, that's cool. Like if we walked down our streets and said that to people, it'd be like, who are you? Like, it is a wild, you know, a wild experience to be part of such a faith-filled organization and culture. Mm-hmm. It's a gift. Great. So we kind of like, as listeners here, we have a little bit of the background and we have to all kind of be wondering like, all right, let's hear about what this experience is like. And Nikki, you just touched on it when you said Wagwan and talked about the patois. So right off the rip, so you both get there, right? And so you understand that you're going to Jamaica. It's an entirely different language and you get off the plane. And did you fly into Montego? Hey.
Kingston.
Okay. So you flew into Kingston. You too, Nikki?
Yes.
Yeah. And so you flew into Kingston. What was the first thing that you kind of remember thinking?
Shoot. I will never forget this. So a past volunteer grad. She wrote me a letter, which was so sweet. So when I got there, I had a letter from her. And she said, Nick, do not be discouraged if within the first week you're like, what am I doing? Because the reality is, like, you are nervous, you're fearful, and it's such a different environment. And you are most definitely an outsider, without knowing the culture, without knowing the language, the social norms, where to go. So I would say, shoot. But also, it's so beautiful. So, I mean, you just look out your window and you see the water and you see the mountains and the blue skies and the palm trees. How about you, Kat?
Yeah, I remember being so excited. So we all got to fly in together, actually. All of us met up in New York for a night. And then we all flew from JFK into Kingston. I remember just being relieved that all of our bags got through customs and like all of that stress was done. I just remember being like so excited. I was so ready because we took a long time to get there. Our visas and work permits kind of got all mixed up for a bit. So we were a couple weeks late, right, Nick? I want to say 2 or 3 weeks coming in late. Also, just for your awareness, 2 years ago today, we landed in Jamaica.
No way.
Yep.
2 years ago today.
That is weird. Like the spirit's doing the spirit's work that we're talking about it today.
Right. Yep.
What is that?
2 years ago today.
The 31st. Okay, great. So July 31st of what are they? 19.
2019, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, congrats, so, man.
Just being there finally, I was just kind of like, I felt like I could like breathe again almost. Like I wasn't, what Nikki talked about, like in the first week, in the first month, you have those moments of, so there's 11 more of these and like my mom, things like that. But I think my initial thing was I looked out and I was just like, this is incredible.
Great. Yeah. You both have that appreciation for being there right away, which is so such a testimony to why you were there to begin with. I remember the site, man, like that island's beautiful and you're flying in there and like, it's cloudy, bam, like crystal blue water. And like you mentioned the mountains and of course the sand, and you're like, all right, I'm here. Like, this is definitely it. But and of course mine was for 10 days. So to have the really like what seems like a daunting amount of time, because time can be daunting, of 11 more months, that is a lot.
Yeah.
What about the language? So there's a huge language barrier, I think, more so for an incomer than perhaps them, because it is English, but it's a dialect that can be a little bit different or a little bit difficult to understand. Can you guys touch on the patois at all?
Yeah.
Do you want something?
Oh,
example.
Go for it, please.
Okay, start us off, Kat.
Oh, what?
My day I look found a picnic dam over there, so. So that was like, what's up? I am here and I'm looking at the children over there. So you can kind of like pick up some words, right? But at the same point, when it's your native language, you talk very fast. And so I know that both of us, when you first arrive there, you're like, oh my goodness, like I don't understand half the things that they're saying. But the thing is like anybody will say this. You want to learn a language, immerse yourself within a culture. And what's so cool is I started realizing as the months were going by, it really began when I started dreaming in patois. So
That's awesome.
And you hear about people when they learn a new skill set or a new language, like it oftentimes comes through in their dreams. And I was like, wow, what a unique experience. But then I'm like, I'm living this. This is really cool. And I would be like in my sight and speaking fluently and things like that, which is neat. And I would say though, it's something that happens so gradually where you pick up on the language and you don't even necessarily realize you're doing so. And a big like moment for me was actually when you guys came from John Carroll And I remember my first place that I took people to was my infirmary. And I'll never forget when one of the individuals in the infirmary started speaking, everyone looked to me to translate. And I remember in that moment being like, oh my gosh, like I know what they're saying and they know what I'm saying, sort of a thing.
Yeah.
That was such like a cool moment of like, I'm immersing myself within the culture. I'll never forget though, this is kind of like a funny little story. One of the men at my infirmary, I remember the one day he was just talking so fast, thick patois accent. And I kept having to say like, excuse me, like again, or what was that? And he was like, are your ears lazy? I was like, no, like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm just new here. And I don't always know what you're saying because I don't know the language as well. And he goes, oh, are you a white girl? And I said, are your eyes crazy? Yes, I'm a white D.
That is so funny.
I love that moment because I don't know. I just feel like over time you come a long way.
Mm-hmm. That playful nature of the Jamaicans is highlighted in that a little bit too. You know, are your ears lazy? And then you give it right back. Are your eyes lazy? Of course. Like,
forgot about that story, Nick.
Awesome. Yeah, really great. Really great.
And I think so too. Yeah, you just have to have the confidence. Like, put yourself out there because they love it. Just as much as like, think about it. If you put it in reverse, when somebody comes to the States and they're speaking English and doing their best, you're like, oh my gosh, great. Like, you're doing awesome. You know? So
yeah, totally. Yeah, you're going to support it. Like, at least they're trying and you're not. I mean, you could just sit there and just be like, okay. And he knows you're trying to understand it when you say, yeah, you're going to have to run that by me one more time. Sure.
So much of patois too is, there's like an attitude to it. There's like a way you carry yourself when you speak it. And I think that's something I would say Nikki and I out of our group like loved the most and like tried to do the most. So I have a similar story with Nikki of like becoming a translator, and I was not fluent by any means, but like we heard it the most, so they would ask us. But some of my favorite stories of speaking patois would be like walking to taxi. So it was usually the one place I had a taxi from the most, it was like a 30-minute walk from where we live to get to the taxi. Mm-hmm. And you get to, when you taxi, they're all in like a lot essentially. And a lot of people want you in their car because you're very easy to spot. You stand out very well. And a lot of people like that's interesting to them. So that will get people into taxis too, because they want to talk to you. They want a picture near you, things like that. So people are kind of just like grabbing at you and stuff. And as you get more confidence, like, you know where you're going, you know what you're doing. But my favorite part is like when someone would speak patois to you and you would reply, and it would be like the most simple thing. It would be like the, hi, how are you? And you responded like with, but they are like, me not need a ride, man, and things like that. And they are so theatrical that like taxi man, they'd be like our age. They would like fall on their like car because they were so shocked that we could speak like that.
Oh my gosh. And
then all we actually had to say. So I would just like then give like the nod and keep walking. But that's like when I knew that the attitude was there, because I was like, people like believed that, like that was good.
It's funny because like when you both tell these stories, you both kind of have like that diva, like the arms going a little bit, like kind of that that swagger about it.
It is.
There's so much like flavor and something that Jamaicans always say, and I think it's become such like a catchphrase here. It's like vibey.
Yeah.
And they genuinely mean it, like, you got good vibes, or like, your vibe be mine. And it's like, no, like, I like the energy you're putting out there. And I think that's something that's so cool, because they put it out there. So when you reciprocate that sort of energy, that zest, that playfulness, they eat it up.
That's so great. Yeah, there is something really infectious about the energy that comes along with the language. I was trying to think about it, like, do you think there's any comparisons to that in English? Like, what do you think, for someone who's trying to maybe picture it, what do you think that maybe a comparison would be in English? I think the vibe is a great example, but maybe with like the attitude that comes with the language. I couldn't really think of one off the top of my head. I was kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, I can't really think of one either. I'm trying to like picture it, or like a movie that like you can compare it to or something.
Yesterday I was watching Outer Banks. I watched the first two episodes, and actually the Caribbean. And so you could hear things like over there, so, and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So it's so cool. I think that even watching movies or hearing things, it is within, but I think oftentimes like if you just don't know it, you won't hear it.
Yeah. So that's a little bit on the language. And of course, that's only one entity of a culture that was entirely new to you. One that you were going to be with for a long time. So what were some of the other aspects of the culture that really stuck with you, or maybe were very different, like the food? What were some of the different cultural aspects that, of course, were very integral, but also very different?
I would say a big thing is, you know, the lifestyle. Island time is a thing. When people say you're on Jamaican time, there is truth to that. So I would say something big that I think is probably like a very broad for like what was different there, but you know, the people you meet there are like everything. They're the people that like have like kept on to the culture. They're the people that have made the food and the recipes and made the lifestyle what the lifestyle is. One thing that still strikes me, and I've been reflecting a lot this week, and Nikki and I were talking about it earlier, is Jamaicans understand the importance of things. And I would say there are three things that I want to emulate. I would say the three things that like I saw all the time that I'm like, I want that so, so badly.
Very
they
cool.
Know the importance of their faith. They know the importance of fun, and fun is not like set to a specific age group. You don't lose your fun once you hit 30. You don't lose your fun at any other time in your life. They all have, I would venture to say, someone that's 75 is having as much fun as a 15-year-old in Jamaica. Oh my and gosh. Then I would say that they know the importance of rest. So faith, I would say, because kind of like what we all touched on, or Nikki and I were talking about earlier, and what you witnessed too, Joe, so much of what they talk about is rooted in their faith. Mm-hmm. And like very upfront with it. It's not like you can say, oh, I can see how like what you just said there may have translated to like your faith life. It's very present. For fun, I think all the time about how, when I moved back from Jamaica, I moved home. I like will be in my room. If I have like my speaker, even remotely loud, my parents like come knock on my door and they're like, can you turn it down? I'm like, we're just trying to have a good time. Jamaica. Like our parents' age and grandparents, they have, it's called Big Sound. They have parties. These speakers, I kid you not, are 10 feet tall outside of people's houses, blaring music till like 2 a.m. There's a grandma out there. She's bopping. She's got a red stripe in her hand. Nothing, like it doesn't faze them. They're having such a good time. It's not like a night out. Like it's not like this crazy thing. It's just like, party, like we're having a neighborhood party tonight.
Yeah, it's just a Tuesday, right?
I'll get the yam, you bring the speakers, like we're gonna have a good time.
And yeah, their parents are knocking and asking them to turn it up, like why is it so quiet?
I'm like, what the heck. And then my last one, rest is, I think a lot of the time here we're always like on the grind, like what are you going to do next? How are you going to become successful? Like, what are these steps that you're going to be doing and stuff? And there's not a lot of time that we step back and reflect or just like sit in it, enjoy what's happening. And that was something I really struggled with there, because we would go into people's yards and, you know, try to have conversations or like, what do you guys want to do today? Like, what can I help you with? Can we go into the like field and like do some things with like the crops, or can I help you cook and stuff? And they'd be like, no, man. And you would just like sit in silence, and then you'd like ask them how they are and then give them thanks. And like, they're literally just present and just like being. It was so simplistic, but so hard for me to do because I was so used to just like being on the go all the time. And I remember while I was there, and I can't remember if it was like one of our spirituality nights or a local Jamaican said it or something, but, and I never thought about it like this, but resting in the Lord is a type of worship. And I think that is something that Jamaicans have down pat. And I love that.
How would you describe resting in the Lord, Kat? What do you think that looks like in Jamaica and then maybe here in the States?
I think in Jamaica, it kind of looks like what I was just describing. Like I would go to someone's yard and I would walk down and let's say a lot of the homes there are intergenerational. So we would say grandma was there, mom was there, daughter was there, and grandbaby was there. They're all just sitting around. Baby might be like rolling around, playing with some things. Everyone else is just sitting. You walk down like it, and it will be borderline silent for like 30 minutes of you being there. Like usually there's a little bit of banter in the beginning, but then you pose a question like that, or they'll just start talking about God or something. And you know, that whole time that's been like on their mind. And maybe it's like kind of more like on a back burner. Maybe it's not like this active thought, but I'll tell you, it's a lot more active than what's going on in my brain. Because like what Nikki was talking about, so much of what we think automatically is I'm fine, I'm good, I've got this to do, today was crummy because of this, all of these things, that doesn't matter. And they make it like so true. I'm giving thanks, I'm blessed. And maybe after they say I'm blessed because the Lord provides. Like today was hard, like we didn't know what exactly we were gonna have for dinner, but then people came by with rice. The church brought rice today. So instead of having yam again, we get to have rice. Or whatever it may be, but I think they just kind of always have it on their mind. And I think just sitting in that, that's what it looks like there. And I think I get glimpses of it here sometimes, but it's definitely not as present.
Have you tried to emulate that? I know you mentioned that those were three things that you did want to emulate. Have you mentioned that just kind of alone time with God?
I would say, to be very honest, it has been a very hard transition home. We got pulled 4 months early because of COVID, and a lot of life that happened there came to an abrupt halt, like it did for a lot of people. But so much of what I wanted to bring home, I feel like I didn't get to practice in the way that I wanted because the world was so different here when we got
back. Okay. Yeah.
So it's there. The desire's there. I think it's kind of what Nikki was mentioning earlier. Like God puts things on your heart and the stirring's there. Like I've tried going back to spiritual direction now that I've been home and things like that. I have a strong desire, but it's hard.
Yeah. And the reality is we do live here. Like I was thinking about that and I'm like, okay, as you're saying this, I'm like, I would have to carve out like that time. Right. Which is again, fair, but it's, again, you have to carve it out. And like, that is a little bit different in the culture difference. And like you're saying, the bustle that we all embark upon.
Right.
Yeah. It's really profound stuff. It's all very, it is all very spiritually driven. Like there's an utter awareness to know that, first of all, God asked that, like he rested on the seventh day. Everyone's familiar with that. So to have an appreciation for rest is in and of itself like very spiritually driven, and then also to be so good at it, that is also very spiritually driven too.
I think so too, that sometimes when all that you have is a new day and you live in such a simplistic way, perhaps due to monetary reasons, but when really all that you have and all that's given to you is a new day, the gift of life has so much more weight to it. Mm-hmm. Like it's just so precious. And I think that like you recognize that within each breath you take, within the sunshine and the way that it feels on your skin, or with each person that you interact with, or perhaps like the scripture story that you read and you're like, I feel this in my core and I can apply it this way. Thank you, Lord, for giving me your word. You know, and so I think sometimes we are just bombarded with a lot of noise and excess that they don't have. And they recognize, though, those little things as such blessings. Mm-hmm. And I really think so much of it is rooted in gratitude. And it's truly a way of life. Like, gratitude is a way of life. And there's this monk that he says, if you're grateful, you are not fearful. And I think that that's so true, because it's like Kat was saying, like, they don't always know where their next meal is coming from. They don't know if they're going to be able to pay for their rent. All of these are true and harsh realities. And I remember just like standing there in awe of them and all these challenges that arise, and they do not let it consume them for one moment. And rather, they look at what they do have. And they really act on a sense of like enough, like I have enough, you know? And I think that you can act in scarcity or enough. And those are really two extremes. And the thing is like, joy won't stem from having things, but it'll stem from being grateful for the things that you do have, you know? And I'll never forget this, Brother David. I think he's a Franciscan monk, if I'm not mistaken. He says, stop, look, and go in moments to really recognize gratitude in your life. And I'll never forget this. I remember one day I was in community. And there's a little boy there who I became so close with. And I remember he's like, Miss, look over at my drum. Like, look at my drum. And I swear to you, I'm looking around and I'm like, I don't see a drum. Like, where's your drum? And I'll never forget, he ran over to this bucket and started playing it. And we had the best time. And I mean, talk about just being so humbled within that moment of being like, I love your drum. Can you play another song? I mean, for him, he saw that drum as like the ability to bring joy, to bring life, to express himself by dancing and creating. So personally, from like glorifying God and being thankful for what you got.
Yeah, you're spot on too. It's that recognition that there's so much more and just appreciating what you have, because that endless quest just keeps going if you don't. Mm-hmm. And when you do, like when you do recognize the good in what you have, then you tend to appreciate just it more, and like you take care of it, and like you praise that bucket as a drum, because it is your drum, and you're like, I love this drum, and watch this, you're gonna love the songs that come from this drum. Like, it allows such an upbeat, happy, joyous life when you ignore kind of the desire for all these crazy things. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something I thought about you too, do you think that, because the Jamaicans have it down and we know this, but do you think that when, like here, a lot of us tend to desire a vacation, right? And like what we want to do is go and sit and relax. And when you plan a vacation, right? Like there's only three big things, like, well, getting there, barring getting there. So where you're going, what you're going to eat, and like where you're going to stay. And then we praise vacations. Like, who doesn't love a vacation? Everyone loves a vacation. But like, I was thinking about that, and the structure of vacation really is what these Jamaicans do. The value of a vacation is what they value, right? It's like the simplicity of, okay, I have a place to stay. Good. Okay. I have some food. Good. And okay, like, I'm just going to appreciate where I am and the people around me. And then of course the food and the staying, and like that, we value as a vacation. We have to carve out time to do that. But contrarily, that's something that they value every day. I was kind of thinking about that, and I was like, that's pretty interesting. Like, if that doesn't show the innate longing for those values, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I love that. Yeah.
And I think it's really just like, it stems from within. They're nurturing themselves, like body, mind, and spirit. Like, mm-hmm. And if you are not full, you can't provide the fullness of yourself to another. And let's be honest, that is the greatest gift. Is to give yourself, your authentic self, to another person.
It does. Yeah. That fullness, you're spot on. I have a mug right next to me that says half full. It's very cliche, but it's cool. It's a nice reminder. So yeah. You said you love it, Kat. What do you love about that?
I just think it's true. Like, I think about all the times that I'm like, I just need to like retreat. Like, I need to go do go somewhere. Like, I need to exit my life to be able to like be rejuvenated. And I get that. And I love retreats, and I love all the girls that I was living in community with. We all got to meet up a couple weeks ago, and like that in itself was so healing, and it was a really beautiful time. And I just think all the time, like I'll be at work or I'll be talking to my roommate, and I'm just like, I just need like time away. But I love that. Yeah. And I'm sure Jamaicans still love to go and, go to like Ocho Rios and stuff and have a day by the waterfalls and stuff. And that's obvious. Yeah. Not what you're talking about, but I think that, yeah, I don't know. I just really agreed with that. I would have never put it in those terms. But it's true.
I think that brings in my mind, my spiritual director said this, somebody asked a woman, how are you so peaceful? And she said, well, I take tons of vacations. And you're like, you take tons of vacations? Like, that's amazing. She goes, oh my gosh, I take tons a day. And they stopped and they paused. And she said, in my mind, I take a vacation. I pause, I sit with God, I check in with myself, and then I come back. And I think that that is exactly what you are explaining. Mm-hmm. And I think really invokes peace, clarity, and a sense of being just present.
Yeah, that is a great analogy. I think you're spot on. That does sum up really the mindset behind it and just kind of the importance of it and why it's such a quest amongst humans.
Sure.
It's one of the biggest things I think anyone can take from their culture, for sure. It's one that I kind of, to use that emulate word, want to emulate and desire to emulate, especially. So another thought too, kind of in that vein, speaking vacations, people who are listening to this more often than not, that are familiar with Jamaica, I would guess, are going to be thinking of, right, the white sandy beaches, the Montego Bays, the Kingstons, and flying in and taking a vacation that is very much like what we described, beach vacation, resort-like. But that would be far contrary to what you have went down and experienced. So could you kind of talk about maybe either that dichotomy or a little bit of like, where were you and what does the real that sounds horrible, but the real Jamaica look like, the overwhelming majority of Jamaica, which is where you spent all of your time, both of you. So.
Yeah. So Nikki and I were kind of in the heart of Jamaica. It's a small island, but we were more or less in the middle. We were in Mandeville. It's one of their parishes there. We worked in like three different parishes, but yeah, for listeners who don't know much about Jamaica, there are a lot of mountains there. Which I think people just, yeah, they never pair with it. And I knew that coming, but not to the extent of what we were seeing.
We lived in the mountains. They call it cool, cool Mandeville.
Yeah. And it's hot in comparison. Very cool. Yeah. I think personally, I struggled mostly. I never really had people not understand where I was going once I decided on Jamaica. So I don't know if I had too many conversations having to explain, no, like I'm not staying at a resort. and then since I've been home, I feel like a lot of people are just kind of like questions. And I don't know if I'm always ready to be so open with it. So it's just kind of like, I did volunteer work in Jamaica for 8 months, and sometimes it just ends with that. But along the lines of what you were talking about and asking, I struggled a lot, touching also what Nikki was talking about, the discernment process. A lot of people during the time of choosing what you're doing next. And they knew I wanted to do a year of service. They knew I was looking internationally now. They knew I was looking at Jamaica now. And people say, oh, you're taking a year off from real life. Oh, you're gonna, yeah, of course you wanna go. Of course Jamaica was the choice. And this is probably getting at the beaches and things like that. And that's what I heard more of rather than like, yeah, what was it like? Were you at a resort? Did you live on a beach? Like what kind of work did you do? It was more at the beginning side of it versus while I was there, if that makes sense.
We all think we know so much about everything, which is what is kind of funny or ironic about this. It's like we all, yeah, a lot of people like making those kind of sarcastic comments are like, oh, of course, like who wouldn't want to pick it? Yeah, the island is beautiful, of course, like, but everywhere is beautiful. I mean, not to diminish it, but like there are a lot of beautiful places. So like, it's, we all think we know so much. That makes it tough.
Yeah. I remember when I was applying though, I read from a Jesuit volunteer who I think was just finishing their third year or something. I looked into JVC, so I was reading a packet from him, and he said, it was like one of his quotes, I forget his name, but he was like, there's nothing more real world than going into the real world and experiencing it fully. The love, the poverty, the real life struggles, the real life joys that these people have throughout all of their days. You know, like how are you telling me that that's not as real life as you going to work in a cubicle? And that sounds really rude, but like, that's what some people are doing after college. And you're making it sound like what I'm doing is, yeah, going on a vacation for a year. And that was really hard within the discernment process and being very like finding that peace within, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? If so many people are thinking that it's not obviously what I'm thinking that it's going to be. But that I heard a lot prior to making the decision of going.
Did that all kind of wipe away when you got there? Like, I'm sure that's a lot of loud cries while you're here, but then you get there and it's like, all right, forget about all that. Like, and you have to, like, you're there. So.
Sure. Right. I always got the, are you going to become a nun? Like, oh, so you're becoming a nun? No. I'm not. But I think something, Sister Marie, one of the co-founders of the program, said this to us while we were over there. She said, this is your gift to yourself. Mm-hmm. This year is going to be full of getting to know who you are. This is a year of recognizing what it means to be human in the most simplistic ways. It's going to be really working on your faith. And finding for yourself, like, what you stand for, what you believe in, and all those types of things. So, I don't know, kind of going off of, like, what Kat said about, like, are you a year behind? Oh, my goodness. I just think, do it. I don't think you'll be behind by any means, because when you put yourself in a situation that makes you uncomfortable, when you put yourself in front of a new culture, new people, mm-hmm. the only thing you could do is grow. I truly think that. I think it's like you jump and you learn to fly. And through that, so many experiences, life lessons, and truly memories to last a lifetime will develop.
Everything that forms our perspective is based upon that which we experience. Like we can read something in a book or like that kind of thing, but until we put stories to it and you put names and faces to ideas and concepts, I don't think we really know anything. So I totally am on board with this idea that of course you're not a year behind. And in fact, I probably have more experience in my year than you have in your year in like cats at a cubicle or whatever the case may be. And it's so different. Yeah, so different. I remember there was a story when I was there. We were just talking in one of the local communities and one of the girls says, oh yeah, I have my doctor's appointment tomorrow. And all the Jamaicans do with that man. And I'm like, For what? Are you okay? Like, and it was kind of just their checkup, but she had to drink the juice. She said, what's the juice? You know? And she's like, oh, well, one of the older people must've caught on that I was totally lost and that we don't drink this juice. Well, this juice was to get rid of, they drink it every 6 months, apparently, and it was to get rid of the worms in their stomach. And I'm like, Oh my God. Like what? You guys know this, right? Yes. Like, yeah, this is not news to either of you, I'm sure. Yeah. My first time hearing this. Pardon me, Nikki, I'm sorry.
It's a very old school practice. Yes.
Man, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like if that does, I mean, that's humbling. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, we go for our checkup and then like take our blood pressure or whatever. And whatever they do, I don't even know. And then, okay, you're fine. Then you leave. No, they go and they drink a juice. They call it a juice. I mean, okay, please. I think a juice, I think like apple juice, not like this juice that's killing worms in my body. So what a, there's just so many experiences like that, that you can't, like that you can't put that into a monetary amount or whatever you think that in this year that you're on vacation, that you're missing out, you're not in the real world, all these horribly inaccurate thoughts. Mm-hmm. And that's one, like that's in 10 days, let alone 8 months. Right. So yeah, unfortunately you guys did get cut short. I know that from both of you that you only had those 8 months there and you were expecting yeah to be there for the full year. So without the, you know, if things kind of go how they're supposed to, and of course there's learning experiences and everything, but without that 4 months, I am sure that you feel slighted in some ways. What was this abrupt ending to such a formidable 8 months like? How did you guys grapple with that, and what did it look like?
Yeah, so the way that it worked out, it's really amazing the way that it worked out looking back. So the island is small, as Kat said. So whenever anybody, and we heard about this COVID, and they'd all be like, you hear about the corona? Like I heard that pretty frequently for months leading up to our departure. Because it was talked about, you know. The thing about Jamaica is that they stay up to date on a lot of different countries and what's going on in the world. So we were aware of it. And there was talk about it in the States. So we would kind of hear about it from our families when we would chat with them. And so whenever anyone had a sore throat or a headache, they would go and get tested. And because the island is so small, we all heard about it. And so it would be like, someone got tested today, it came back negative. And so what happened was a woman came over from England. So a lot of Jamaicans live in England because it was a British colony, Jamaica was. And she came over for a funeral. Well, she brought the virus over with her. And that was Thursday, we heard about this, that this happened. Thursday, our school shut down. Thursday, the infirmaries were talking about, like, I don't think we should have visitors. By Saturday, we were informed not to even go to our sites. So we were actually in quarantine from that Saturday until, what would it have been, Kat, the following Wednesday, I believe?
We left on a Friday. I think we heard the news on Thursday, I believe.
Okay. So until that Thursday. That Thursday night around like 7:30. So we're in our homes, just so you know. Like we are not allowed to go anywhere. We are in our home, that's it. And so we're getting calls from our families because at this point the US is like shut down. I remember my mom being like, Nikki, I don't think you understand, like they're limiting the time you go to grocery stores, you have to wear a mask. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't even understand this. I don't really know.
This was around the time that the borders were starting to shut for certain countries. It wasn't, Jamaica's border wasn't, or the US to Jamaica wasn't being shut yet, but that's what our parents were very concerned about.
Sure, so this is March, to put it into perspective. Middle to end of March. Yeah, so basically the whole country was like on pause. We were in quarantine. We were just kind of hanging out from there. So we're getting kind of bombarded with calls and things like that from people from the States of like, so you're going to be sent home. And we're like, what do you mean be sent home? Like, it's not that serious.
Right.
Because we're like, oh my gosh, like one person had it, but then they shut everything down and we're like, that community is closed off. They're all quarantining. We'll be good. I'm sure we'll return to work shortly. So Thursday evening around 7:30 p.m., we got a call from our director and said, the U.S. Embassy is sending you home. You're leaving at 6 a.m.
Dang.
Yeah. And so it was
turnaround.
I mean, it was quite a shock to say the least. Obviously, we kind of are catching wind and people are saying borders are closing. Like, so we were preparing ourselves to a degree. But I mean, you could have heard a pin drop when those words were said. And so then, I mean, Kat, you could take it away, but we had to pack up our things and we called the people that had cell phones and we're like, listen, like we're getting sent home. And it was horrific.
Yeah. I've never had a headache so bad from crying so much. Oh. But we had to make a lot of calls that night because a lot of the older people that we were working with had Jamaican cell phones but didn't have data, so that you can't talk to them from here unless we're paying, you know, the fee to call. A lot of younger people have WhatsApp, which has been really great to stay in contact, but that's why all of us were like on the phone for hours that night and trying to pack everything up.
My gosh. Yeah, because you had been in those communities. You all had, there were five of you, and you all had your own little community, so you had grown so close with them at that time. And just like to abruptly end anything is horrible. I think
to not be able to say, like, we had no face-to-face goodbyes because it was a 12-hour turnaround. So I think it was so abrupt that there wasn't even like FaceTime, which, I mean, it would have stunk to be able to say goodbye to everyone, but at least it would have been in person.
Right, right.
Not have that kind of closure has been hard.
Yeah. How are you guys doing with it now? How are you grappling with it, you know, a couple months later, really?
It was very, very hard. I just remember like feeling so out of body for like 2 months afterwards. Like I remember talking to my parents, like, well, I texted my parents when we got the phone call that we were coming home. And I said, I'll send you my itinerary. Like, I don't want to talk right now. Like, I'm not using this time to talk to you because I'll see you in 12 hours. But I remember getting home. I was very smooth transition in the airport. I was like outside off the plane and like in my parents' car in like 15 minutes, which was weird with customs and everything. My parents rolled up. I like made eye contact with them and I just lost it. And I think it's very, your parents can only understand to an extent. And I think so much of what they're thinking is like, you're safe. Like, why? Kind of why you should be happy that you're home. Like the world is, God knows what's happening in the world right now. Like this is good for now. And it's not to us because it was just so hard. But yeah, no, I think I say all the time, like it was very healing to be with the girls a couple weeks ago, but I don't feel like I will be able to kind of close this chapter of my life until I get to go back. Because having no closure within it, like I was trying to read through my journal yesterday, kind of in preparation for chatting with you, and I couldn't even get myself to read more than like 15 pages.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's been a journey, and I think that's a huge reason why I'm so thankful that we were living in community there. Because if I didn't have Nikki, Aaron, Kelsey, and Courtney, I can't even imagine what it would have been like coming home. But to be able to talk and confide in and vent and just sit with the people that know exactly what you're going through was such a blessing.
Yeah, for sure. And just a quick note on that. Part of your team is that you all brought different things, just like with anything. But I'm under the impression that they placed you knowing a little bit of a feel for your personalities, which is to create a cohesive team. And that's great to have on your side in this kind of situation. So that's hard. That's hard. That's crazy hard. I'm sorry for you guys, first of all. And I shared with you, Nikki, too. You and I were having a conversation one time, and like, there's a saying that a slow death is for the living and that a quick death is for well, the dying, the one that's dead. And you guys definitely experienced a quick death there. But the tough part of it, of course, is that you're still here and you're grappling with it. And it's something that you have to deal with. And that's hard. And Kat, you share visions of going back. And Nikki, I'm sure you too, right?
Oh my gosh, I'm ready. Ready to pack my bag. And we actually are. We're going, all of us, in January, which, I mean, I think that my heart is going to implode. I really do. Like, I think about it. And I am just over the moon. I think something that I've really learned this year so much is with experiences, relationships, people, you don't move on, you move with the experience. And so I'm sure I could speak for Kat and I both and all the girls. It's like, you think about those memories and those moments and you are taken back. Like, I can smell the air. I can feel the breeze and the warmth. I could hear the giggles, like all of that kind of stuff. Or I listen to the music and I am just like, filled with like the Jamaican culture. And I mean that so much. Like that experience, like I have not moved on, I've moved with it.
It's a part of you now. And like Nikki Malocker is part Jamaican. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so great. So you guys are all going back in January, like in whatever that is, 6 months?
Yeah.
No way. And you get to all go to your communities? Like, where are you staying? What's the... Give us the skinny. What's the word?
We haven't gotten all the details.
The plan in Jamaica is that there never is a plan.
Yeah.
There's never
spot on.
You know, you've been.
The thing is, at this point, we know so many people there. We could call Ronnie when we get in and be like, hey, Ronnie, we forgot to let you know, but we're in Kingston. Could you give us a ride? And without a doubt, we would have somewhere to stay that night. People would be like putting us up. We're not going to do this to anybody. But like, that's like what Jamaica is. Like he would pick us up in a heartbeat. It would take a little time because it's like 2 hours away. But we have so many people that we built relationships with that we could stay with them and things like that. So I like, it's not even a worry in my mind. I'm like, we got the plane. That's all we need.
And all five of you are going at the same time. Like, you managed to make that happen. You got the two hardest things. You have the way to get there, and all of you are going.
Yep.
Island time takes care of the rest.
Yes.
And that bus ride with Ronnie, just for anyone listening, Ronnie was a bus driver there. Not really, but like, he drove a bus that we all got on. And like, when you drive the island of Jamaica, that is an experience. They drive fast. They also drive on the other side of the road, which is weird. You feel like you're about to get hit by oncoming traffic, even though it's going against you, just on the opposite side of the road. And everything's tight. Like, there's trees everywhere and there's other cars that are fitting next to you that shouldn't fit next to you. Like, I was joking that he moves trees to fit on the road, but how did you get used to driving on the other side of the road and like the mayhem that is both taxi and driving? You guys drove.
We drove. And so, yeah, perspective, you're on the other side of the road and your steering wheel is on the other side as well. So you're just like kind of wobbling off. Yeah, everything is opposite. I think Kat and I probably had the most anxiety towards driving. Would you agree? Boy, it's terrifying.
I will say, though, I felt safer driving myself than in most of those taxis because There is such a thing, I think, as too comfortable when you're driving. And, I mean, seatbelts, there's no car regulations there. So, like, I remember being in taxi once. I was in the front seat by myself, which is rare. Typically, there's two people in the passenger seat. Right. And I was like, oh, like, this is my time to, like, put my seatbelt on. And I go, and, like, it won't clip in. And I, like, look at the guy, and I'm like, and he was like.
What's up?
What's the problem? And I was like, well, he was like, doesn't matter.
He's like, you want the driver's wheel too? Like, what what else can I get for you?
What's your problem?
Yeah, you refresh my memory of the time that you were in taxi and like there was duct tape on the window.
Oh my God. I had a handful. And I didn't taxi the most out of everybody because I don't know why. I felt like I had the cargo amount.
But yeah, there was this one time I was taxiing. And so there's no door handles to get out of the car. You can get in the car and there's a door handle on the outside, but not the inside. So it's tied to a piece of string that's like stuck in something. Like I couldn't physically like figure out how to get it. And the taxi driver just like is reaching over like 8 people to grab it and to let me out. But then he comes and I don't know what happened. I don't know if I tried to roll down the window. Something happened, but the glass in the window just like dropped and he like catches it. He just like shoves it up. And I'm just sitting there like it'll be fine, we'll make it.
Oh my gosh.
Kelsey always said, Kelsey, she didn't drive there, so she taxied all the time. But every once in a while, if she was close by and someone was on their way home, we'd go pick her up. So I'm picking her up one day. There's like Mack trucks. Isn't that what they're called? Like the big trucks that drive on these very tiny roads. Like Joe was saying, there's this car coming. I'm driving. Kelsey is like, so Kelsey's on the outside. I'm on the left side of the road, but Kelsey's sitting like on the shoulder side. And she's like, right? And she's like, cat, and she thinks we're like about to go off, and there's no guardrails, there's no nothing, it's the road and then there's the cliff. So Kelsey's like panicking, this car passes, I'm not like fazed by it because I'm like, it'll be fine. Kelsey goes, I like, our tire was half off. So she always joked, she was like, there's the Jamaican road and then there's 5 feet and that's just God's hand holding us up. And I was like, the amount of times that that's probably true isn't even funny.
Oh my God. That's so true too. Like if you're the one experiencing it, aside from the driver, you're like, I'm dead. Like there's no shot this car's fitting. There's no shot I'm not falling hundreds of feet off this cliff. You never do. I never get in a car crash, never fall off the cliff. I mean.
Amazing.
It truly is. It truly is.
It just doesn't exist on the roads.
Right.
Another thing that's funny that taxi showed me about Jamaica is like the personal space, not a thing. I mean, okay. You sit on each other, like 5 people sit on another person and then like another person lays on top. I mean, it's just, you're tight. It is very tight in there.
It's yeah. Call yourself, which literally means get as thin as you can and squeeze in because we're going to fit 6 people in a 3-seat.
Yeah. This is my like best Jamaica story because it's one of those moments, you know, when you have a moment in life when you're like, I just wish that was recorded. Like I just, my reaction and like all of that was recorded. So I'm taxiing. I don't think it was the same car, but I'm taxiing. It takes us a while because there's no like specific route. So like you just get in the taxi. There's like a route you're getting to, but you might be going to different neighborhoods for lack of a better word. So it takes us a while. We finally have, we're like in a Honda Accord, to put it in perspective of a car. So it's a 5-seater car. We've got, I think, 5 in the back. One's like a probably middle schooler. So like he's on mom's legs. And then there's 4 other adults. I'm back there. Then there's 2 people in the passenger seat. And then the driver. So we're driving, we're finally getting out of like the big neighborhood and like hitting the main road. So I'm like, okay, we're good. And you hear someone like yell taxi. So the guy stops and I'm like, oh, like that's sweet. Like he's going to go tell her like we're full, but like someone else will be here soon. This woman starts walking up to the car and she gets in the driver's seat. And I'm like, no. And she like scoots in and the driver gets in and like can barely shut his door shut. So now there's 5 in the back and 4 in the front seat. And there's supposed to be 2 in the front. My mouth was like, and I remember contemplating, do I ask to get out? Like, I just like really don't feel safe. But at the same time, like, I'm pretty confident I'll be fine. So then I went, but I just remember, like, I can almost remember like the feeling of my jaw drop in that moment. Cause I was like, this simply can't be real life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's funny. Like they'll just have a conversation like that's nothing too.
Yes.
Unfazed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My gosh. That is so great, Kat. That is a good one. To be like the fly in that car, just watching this all go down, like you're saying, record it.
Mm-hmm. I wish.
Oh my God, that's awesome. What about you, Nikki? What's like your favorite taxi story? Do you have any of those that are kind of like, I made it out of there? Like, I'm supposedly having this podcast episode right now, so I guess I'm here. But
I think over encompassing, they were all, you know, it was a bit questionable, but I'm here. I never really had like one like true, real, like I just saw my life flash before my eyes scenario. But something that I do love about taxi is like Kat said, like you go, there's an end destination. So if your stop is within this stretch, they'll take you. And so different taxis go to different places, right? And so you do get to know them and they get to know you. And Kat kind of touched upon it when she was like, when you're walking to taxi, like there's a lot of yelling and pulling for you and things like that. I'll never forget one day, it was, oh my gosh, it was early in the morning. I had school, so I would leave at 5:30. And I'm walking a taxi, and you say good morning to everybody, and I'm saying good morning, and I walk up to taxi. And the moment they see you, like they know your routes. And I mean, we stuck out like sore thumbs. So they're like, Santa Cruz. And all of a sudden, I see two men charging towards me, and they're two of my taxi drivers. And here I am standing quite literally in a tug of war match. They all both have my arms, and I'm getting pulled to the left and then to the right and to the left again. And they're like, this is my Browning. And the other one's like, she's mine. And it's so funny because they become a bit like possessive of you, but it is so playful.
Yes.
So playful. But you get to know them and you put your life in their hands and just trust that everything will be good.
Mm-hmm.
The Jamaican way, everything will be good.
Right.
Everything is.
I feel like a lot of great stories come from taxi. You got tug of war. I mean, you're breaking mirrors and all, everything is going on in taxi. That is so great. It's funny because you can just picture it too. And like, all this is going on and it sounds like complete mayhem in the taxi. And then you're driving through the most beautiful mountains and oh man, the sunsets that you see. And I remember the sunset one day over taxi, there was a guardrail where we were. Cause I remember it was just above the guardrail. It was like where the sun was, I guess, still going down. So couldn't believe it. Yeah. The one guardrail on the island, but
I spotted it.
Yeah.
So gorgeous.
I remember we were driving to go on two house trips, which was for like community building within the five girls that were volunteering. And I was driving this one. We're driving, the whole thing's through mountains. It's through like all curvy and stuff. And we remember thinking like, I remember all of us had the same moment of like, that could have been like so bad. Because think about all the car accidents that happen in the States. It's because a lot of the time someone just like looked out the window. They were like caught by something and they rear-ended somebody. You get distracted in Jamaica, like you literally are going like straight off. So we were turning, it's like this huge U-turn and there's no guardrail. And that's like where the mountain ended. Do you remember this, Nikki? It was like, And I just remember driving and everybody was like, oh my gosh. And like, we weren't close to going off or anything. Like I saw it, it was during the daytime. Like everything was fine. But I think that was the first time where I was like, I mean, that's like, that's insane. But yeah, no, I don't remember. I'm sure I saw a guardrail, but I just can't picture it right now.
Like I have sweaty palms right now listening to that story. I'm like, this is like, I'm like tweaking out over here. Like, oh my God, you're gonna fly off a mountain.
Right. I almost, my parents didn't get to come, unfortunately, because we got pulled back early.
Oh, no.
But I almost was grateful for it because I was like, I don't know if I could have handled like my mother in a car with me driving. Like I would have had to blindfold her. I would have been like, it's a beautiful view, but you can't look.
Can't. Picture it while you can't see it. So
my dad probably would have just been like screaming on the inside, but I can just envision my mom being like trying to like pull the steering wheel, making sure we're not going to go
She yanks it off. Exactly. Yeah. Your dad's just hanging out the window. He's enjoying it. He's like, this is great. Oh man. You know, if you had like one piece of just like, what, why do this? Why go and experience all of the greatness? What is like the one overarching meaning that you would say to someone who's listening, like, and you encourage them off of nothing to go, someone who's debating where to go, someone who is just entering high school and is going to talk to their freshman year campus minister, what is your one piece of advice at that time?
I think kind of touching on what Nikki talked about, if you have that yearning, lean into it. You won't regret it. I think once you kind of lean in and surrender to it, there's such a peace in that. Joe, you had asked earlier, like, after hearing the comments that friends and family would make here about, you know, taking the year, you know, having time on the island or stepping back from real life. You said, once you stepped foot in Jamaica, did you find peace? I found peace as soon as I committed to Jamaica. As soon as I made the call to the director, and that was months before we left, I hadn't even graduated college yet. I made that decision and I knew that was where I was supposed to be. So okay. I just, no matter what anybody says, no matter what, like, your mind might be saying, but your heart's not saying, your heart's tugging you a different way, I would just really say lean into it.
It's so funny, Kat, that you used those words, lean into it, because immediately when you asked that question, that's the first phrase that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. God placed it there for a reason. So follow it. Nothing but goodness can come from it. It will only better you. And I would even argue, like, when you are there, continue to lean into it. It is a choice to lean into it every single day, to hug a little tighter, to stare a little longer, to hold a hand just a little tighter, like all those things, that is an act of choice every single day. And then I also just think, for me personally, when people are like, will you be a year behind or whatnot? I want to take everything that I learned and squeeze out of my experience in Jamaica into my everyday life, into my perhaps office job, into the way that I raise my children, into the way that I treat my friends and my family. And perhaps this is very true, like, you don't always succeed, but you are reminded of what it feels like to succeed in those ways. And you have such a beautiful frame of what it means to just be human in the most simplistic ways. And I think when you keep that in mind, life becomes a lot more easier.
Wonderful, both of you, absolutely wonderful. It makes me smile just hearing both of your advice. I'm like, I'm gonna take that in, you know, I'm like, I'm gonna add this into my life and lean into it. Definitely lean into it. That's a good, Nike should hire you for that. Nike should hire you for that one. Lean into it. Like, that's that is a good one. Yeah, I'm kind of moved right now. I don't really know. Like, I'm just sitting here thinking about it and it's taking me a second. So I'm kind of just sitting in it, leaning into it. It's special when you have the capability and the awareness to take all of that you've experienced and consolidate it. And that's a real tough request. So I appreciate you both coming up with something very concrete. You shared your experience throughout this entire time and have now put it in a way that we can take something and a very quick snippet says, lean into it. Like, God is moving you. And we know all the different layers and it's kind of come to this acme point of lean into it and really experience things in the Jamaican way, in that humanly peaceful, serene, beautiful way that is grateful for life at the end of the day. It's very grateful for life. Do you think that as you go forward, do you think that there are any regrets in your life that you maybe have become aware of now that you've gone to Jamaica and experienced these things? Do you think, or not so much? There's of course that opportunity too there. You could just punt, just be like, nah.
I think I am just so grateful that I think differently.
That what, Kat? I'm sorry.
I think I think I'm just very grateful that I think differently now than I have in like past experiences and past events in my life. I don't like saying regret, because then I'll just like sit in that for a long time and that'll just not bring me down a productive way. But I think in every experience, and especially within Jamaica, learning so much, and just I can see in little ways how I process and think about things differently. So no, I probably wouldn't have done some things that I have done in the past, or I would have liked to react differently or say different things. But I choose to side on the, I'm glad I've recognized that and I want to do it this way now.
Special. Yeah, that's how you do it. It's the only way we learn from the past. That's it. That's how you do it, you know. How about you, Nikki?
With Kat on this one, I think that all of our experiences, the way the things that we have done, the way we've reacted, the things that we've accepted from others or whatnot, all those types of things, like it just adds to the plot of your life, of the experiences, of what makes you you, what really changes your perspective on things. And so I'm gonna go with no. And I also think though, like moving forward, if there's something that I learned during my year, and perhaps this is something that'll encourage someone or whatnot, is don't wait. I mean, tomorrow is simply not promised. And one of Kat and I were talking about this, like one of our favorite phrases, and it really struck us to in the beginning. It's like, okay, well, I'll see you tomorrow. And it's like, if life spares, because the reality is like tomorrow is not promised. And so if you want to live with no regrets, I think you just have to be honest with yourself, be authentic to yourself, and just go for it. So if you're like, Kat, Joe, I'd love to get together with you, put it on the calendar. If you're like, I want to bungee jump, set a date and go do it. Life is short,
yeah.
It's so precious. So you're not promised tomorrow.
Tough thought, man. Like, it's the amount of people that have said like see you tomorrow and then not seeing that person tomorrow, that's a tough thought. It really is. That's humbling.
Yeah. Nikki and I were talking about that earlier, and how I think it was something that was so present in Jamaica, and I was telling her it took me probably 5 months to like allow people to say that to me without being like upset about it. Like they would say it and I'd be like, I'll see you on Wednesday, like don't think like that. But it was negative, never in a negative way, like, oh well, like maybe. It was like, if I'm here, like I'm not promised tomorrow, I trust in like whatever's gonna happen, and if I'm here, I'm excited to see you on Wednesday. Yeah. But that's if life spares. And it's like saying like I'm fine or good, like it was just so effortless the way they say it. And to me, I would say for 5 months I was like, every time someone would say it,
it is this kind of like groundbreaking. You're just like, whoa, like, yeah, right. Well, I surely hope so.
Exactly. And I think hearing it and getting to a point where I was comfortable with it, and now we've come back to a worldwide pandemic that we've been in for over a year now, it makes it even more, it's just like right in your face. Like you truly never know what tomorrow's going to look like. And I think, yeah, that's been one of my biggest takeaways too. A lot of their like little snippet words, their responses, that's like what strikes me all the time.
Real quick, can you touch on the phrase that every dink, Chris, that great response that is flourishing down there right now?
I think this is like a perfect segue. Like everything's Chris, like I have life, so I am blessed. Like, and I think that Bob Marley, it's like, don't worry about a thing because everything's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. And they always, like, if something arises, no problem, man. Like, no problem. Like, you are enough, you will be enough, and it will be enough. Mm-hmm. And as long as you show up in your presence alone, it just is. It's enough. Mm-hmm. And so you're alive, you are blessed. Everything's good, no problem, no issues. It's hard to even fathom, because I know for myself, I'm like, what about this and that that I worry about? But And the thing is the things that they worry about are true necessities. It's going to be okay. Everything's Chris.
Everything's Chris. Yeah. It's kind of like, really, it's like my favorite line, I think, that I've taken from there. And it's like, are you alive? Basically, I feel like that's almost the question, because it's like, yeah, look, everything's Chris, you know, like everything's good. There's a guy that I worked with at a country club, and he was one of the hardest working men there. And it was after I came back from Jamaica, and somehow I knew he was Jamaican. Like, I could just tell. And I'm like, are you from Jamaica? And he's like, yeah. Like, how'd you know? And I'm like, a little bit of like your accent. And just, I could tell, like, I explained it, that I was there for 10 days. And so we started just doing a little bit of the slang, like the Madea man and the Wagwan. And it was always, then it started, like, he would come in and he'd be like, hey, Joe, everything Chris. And I'd be like, everything Chris, man. And I was like, you? And he's like, yeah, everything Chris. It was great. Just that personality that they have involved in their language again. So, and that mentality that everything is Chris.
Right. And I just love how they, like, you become like their brother, and like they say things like that, like brethren and stuff, and they love it. Like, you think 10 days and like he still like holds on to that and speaks to you in Patois. I met this man, I was visiting my sister in Birmingham, Alabama, and a Jamaican man started a food truck. So I went there to get lunch one day while my sister was working, and I like pop in, I'm talking to him, I told him I was there. And then this guy comes up, and I don't know. He's like some guy in a suit. He's like on his lunch break, but he was like trying to get something. I don't know what was happening, but the Jamaican man, like, he didn't want to talk to him. So he's like lying about how he's like not the guy anymore. And he's looking over the guy's head at me, like making faces, like we're like best friends. And I'm like, we just met. We talked for probably like an hour after. And he's cracking jokes. Like, I felt like I was his friend from like years ago. Like, we had like little banter, and I was like, we met 5 minutes ago. But just like that one piece, really, it clicked so much. And I just love that. That reminded me so much of it.
It is right. You're right. That brotherly, like, kind of love. I think it's a great phrase for it too. A great way you put that, Kat.
Yeah.
One love.
One love. Yeah, there you go.
That is it.
The last thing I have for you guys, and it's kind of ties in this Jamaican mentality, it ties in being a person of faith and really everything. One of my big contentions with my podcast, with anything that I put out there, is that if we want to have a fruitful, productive, joyous, servile life, then we ought to live gratefully, and we ought to be grateful individuals. You both have touched on it a little bit, and Nikki, you kept going back to that idea that, like, it is something that is pivotal for life. How do you think that your experiences in Jamaica have influenced your approaches to living a life of gratitude? What is the highlighting moment for you or the highlighting way that you do that?
Personally, I think for me, it all starts with awareness of where you are, who you're with, what you're doing. I think if you are aware and present enough to be within the moment, you're able to look at it, to recognize it, and then to enjoy it. I think that moments pass so quickly. And so oftentimes, like, we're living and we're moving and we're going. And then you look back a week later and you're like, that was awesome,
yes.
Right? And so it's like, but if you are aware and present in that moment, you're like, this is sacred and this is so special. And I think sometimes too, like, to be so caught up with the moment is so freeing. Mm-hmm. You're not just living, like, your spirit is alive. And gratitude can only come from that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Nikki. Thank you.
Yeah, I think she hit it on the head. As soon as you said it, all I was thinking is presence and life. I think that's the one thing the biggest thing I took away is just how precious life is. And to be aware of, you can only,
I feel like experience and accept and like use that gift so much by being present within it. Like if you just have life and you're like, oh, that's cool, but you're not taking care of those moments, then like what really is that? Mm-hmm. So just as you were like talking and stuff, I was thinking of another phrase they use, and they say, "Pon mi feet," or we talked about Medea. I'm on my feet. I'm here. And just things like that. Like if you, someone says that and you think about it for a second, you don't just say like, okay, like I'm here in this moment with you guys and that's it. And I think, yeah, I agree 100% with Nikki said.
Awesome. You both are really great examples of that. You always are present, and you know, something that is great testimony to that is your willingness to recollect on other great moments too. And we've done that today. I think we've had a great opportunity to share, both of you, really, your stories and the experiences that we all have had in the special place that is Jamaica and the special place that it has in our hearts. So thank you both for coming on to this Chats with Clark, for overcoming any nerves that you may have had or anything like that. And I really appreciate it. And to any of our listeners, we thank you. So
thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for anyone listening, as always, I'll put everything down in the comments below. So I will, as long as these two are right with it, throw their social media and things down into the comments so you can get in touch with them if you need to, or see what else they have going on in their wonderful lives. And again, please subscribe. It's time that this Chats with Clark gets out there. We need everyone to be hearing these special stories like the ones that they have in Jamaica. So once again, I'm your host, Joe Clark. Kat, Nikki, thank you both. This has been another episode of Chats with Clark.